This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of June, 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of June 2012, which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Claire Caffreen.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, this week's announcements, we start with What's On. And we've got a couple of items. Hampshire Open Gardens at Swanmore. For many years now, gardens in and around the village have been open to the public with the proceeds supporting St Barnabas. And there are a variety of gardens, and this year they will be open on the 24th of June and the 29th of July. And teas and refreshments are available, including homemade cakes, and depending on the weather, they'll be indoors or outdoors. And the cost of £5 will include car parking and the use of a hop-on, hop-off minibus for those that don't wish to use their cars. And tickets are available at Swanmore, and the promoter is John Sharp. If you want more details, telephone 01489 892 750. That's 01489 892 750. Now, there's Baroque Music in Winchester Guildhall, a professional series of performances. And the final performance is on the 20th of June with Eleanor Harrison playing the Baroque violin. This is on the 20th of June and the concert starts at 8 p.m. and will run for around an hour. The doors open at 7:40 p.m. If you require tickets at £12.50, you can phone 01962 840500. That's 01962. 840500, or you can get them over the counter at the Winchester Tourist Office. And finally, there's the Winchester Chamber Orchestra Summer Concert on the 30th of June at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. For details, telephone 01962 860 240. And this particular concert features the 13-year-old Lou Warnett, who won the Kent International Piano Course competition held in Tunbridge, and part of his prize was to perform a concerto with the orchestra. He will be the soloist playing the piano concerto in G major by French composer Ravel, who was a pupil at the Paris Conservatoire. So that's on the 30th of June at St Paul's Church. For details, telephone 01962 860 240. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 8th of June at 4:52 a.m. and begins at 9:19 p.m. And on Wednesday the 13th of June it ends at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:22 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, and Lynn will send you a replacement memory stick. Now, the main headlines this week: thousands caught in fuel poverty, district ranks sixth for rodent callouts, and a party fit for a queen. So, Noel, maybe have the story behind the first headline.
Yes, thousands caught in fuel poverty. More people in Winchester are living in fuel poverty than either Basingstoke or Fareham, shock new figures have revealed. Around 4,000 households, or 1 in 10 people, spend more than 10% of their income on heating bills. That places them in fuel poverty, according to the government's Department of Energy and Climate Change. It means they struggle to pay for adequate heating, usually 21 degrees centigrade for the main living area and 18 degrees centigrade for other occupied rooms. Living in cold rooms can damage people's health and affect their quality of life. The elderly, children, and those with a disability or long-term illness are especially vulnerable, says the government. But it's not only these groups who are suffering. People can fall into the fuel poverty trap due to poor energy efficiency in their homes, high energy prices, and because of low incomes. Sue McKenna, operations manager at the Trinity Centre, which helps the vulnerable and homeless, said, "We've noticed it more this year. In the winter we had people coming in on a weekly basis. We have people coming to us with their meter keys, asking us to put some money on it because they've had no heating at all for weeks. Some people don't watch television, so they can conserve their electricity for heating." John Edwards, vice chairman of Age UK Winchester, said the number is higher in Winchester, partly because there are more elderly people. Mr. Edwards says, "There are two groups of elderly people who are most vulnerable, and they're both represented in the Winchester district. These are those on low incomes, which many people don't appreciate, and there are those living in rural areas where they can be quite isolated." Dr. Diane Newell, chairman of Age UK Andover, which also advises elderly people from the Winchester district, said, "Older people are always going to be the ones that suffer most because they're the ones that need to keep warm." And Jenny Meadows, chief executive at the Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau, said the service saw 121 people last year suffering problems of fuel debt. But she added, "People don't always distinguish between types of debt when they come to us. So considering 4,000 came to us with general debt problems, I think the numbers experiencing fuel debt could in theory be much higher than 121. Hampshire County Council recently extended the deadline for applications to its Insulate Hampshire scheme, which offers residents free insulation. County Council leader Ken Thornburgh said, "Fuel poverty leads to around 30,000 winter deaths nationally, the highest in Europe, and costs the NHS £1 billion every year. We've had a number of particularly severe winters recently in Hampshire, and forecasts predict more to come." South East England MEP Catherine Bearder, whose office compiled the latest fuel poverty figures, warned against complacency and is urging all residents who might qualify for financial aid with their bills to seek help.
District ranks sixth for rodent call-outs. Winchester is one of the hottest of hotspots for call-outs on problems with rats, according to new figures. City Council received 18.62 requests per 1,000 residents, or around 2,100 calls, to deal with rodent problems over a year, which is the sixth highest figure in the UK. The data come from the first British Pest Control Association, BPCA, national survey, which analysed demands across all 393 local authorities in the UK over a 12-month period. Pests covered by the data include rats, mice, bedbugs, cockroaches, wasps, ants and birds. The BPCA sent Freedom of Information Act requests asking for figures for the 12 months to April 2011. Simon Forrester, BPCA chief executive, said, "There may be a number of local factors why Winchester features so prominently, but the BPCA is concerned that on a national scale, pest control budgets are being hit. That makes it harder for councillors to respond as effectively as they would like, which could have implications for both quality of life and public health." Mr. Forrester added, "Authorities are reducing manpower and looking at new ways of dealing with pests." City Councillor Roger Huckstep, portfolio holder for environment, said, "I think great care has to be taken in coming to any conclusions based on 1 year's unverified figures. This is particularly important as we know that, despite being a very rural area, we have seen a drop in the numbers of requests for our pest control service by nearly 40% over the last 4 years. Councillor Huckstep said, "The council recognises the importance of a cost-effective and efficient service and brought it back in-house last year to reflect the changing demands from the public."
And the final headline article is a caption for a photograph, "A Party Fit for a Queen." And there are two ladies, Anna and Belle, of the Hotchpotch Performers. Very colourfully dressed, blue and white, with tiaras, in the High Street, at the bottom end by the market, and thousands of people turned to the city centre into a sea of red, white and blue on Sunday for a jubilant street party fit for a queen. More than 200 live performers, from musicians and magicians to comedians and actors, made the Broadway in Winchester come alive at the free party, complete with stalls, workshops and food. Well, that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. Firstly, we'll start with the death notices for the 8th of June. Dunstan, Reginald John Dunstan, who died peacefully in hospital, aged 81. Hebbard, Fred Hebbard, on the 27th of May, aged 90. Hibdidge, Margaret Hibdidge, known as Peggy, on the 30th of May in Devon. Holloway, Frieda Beatrice Holloway, who died peacefully at Brackenlea Nursing Home, aged 99. Leyland, Arthur Leyland, died in hospital on the 3rd of June, aged 80. And Penton, Susan Julie Penton, who died suddenly in hospital, aged 71. And now Claire's going to read Christian comment. Claire.
And Terry Hemmings writes about the importance of remembering. I've been watching the films of the coronation of 1953. How different life seems then from today. Yet many of us can remember how the celebrations affected us. I recall for a little boy it seemed like Christmas in June, with decorations and the floats coming through Winchester. I was disappointed the next year when, unlike Christmas, it did not reoccur. It is right at a time of Jubilee to remember. I have also been preparing for a funeral service. Again, at such a time, it is right to remember. Recently, there have been wedding anniversaries and birthday celebrations, which also caused people to look back and remember. There are so many occasions when the proper response is to remember. Religion is often about memory. According to the Hebrew scriptures, the Jewish people were to hold the Passover each year so that they remembered. The whole family had to be gathered together, and even today, the youngest at the Passover asks a question about its significance as part of that remembrance. The central and most significant part of Christian worship is the not forgetting of the communion service, when Christians follow Christ's instructions to eat and drink in memory of him. In fact, forgetfulness is seen as a sign of sin and a cause for sin. The people of Israel are warned that when they prosper, they are not to forget God's deliverance and think that they have gained their riches through their own strengths and merits. The New Testament is constantly reminding the early church of the great changes brought about by the Christian message and that they should not forget the apostles' teaching. As individuals, we need to remember. We need to remember in order to be grateful. Looking at the films of our country 60 years ago, we see how much more prosperous we are and how we have progressed in so many areas. We would not always guess that from the grumbles and complaints we hear. As a country, we need to remember how we have got here. Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, reminded the House of Lords this week how much our country's laws and administration owe to a long conversation with the Jewish and Christian intellectual world. The coronation service goes back to 973 and the crowning of King Edgar, with St. Dunstan forming the liturgy of the service in the 10th century. So let us not have forgetteries, but memories. Let us remember, not just to indulge nostalgia, but in order to be thankful and to know how to lead a good life. Terry E. Hemming.
Thank you. Now we move on to the letters from the editor, and Noel's going to start us off. Noel.
Yes. Jim Fleming writes about an open caucus for commissioner vote. Sir, in response to the letter from Richard Stobart in Chronicle May 24th, regarding the forthcoming police and crime commissioner election, it is encouraging to see such interest in how candidates will be selected. I am pleased the Conservative Party in Hampshire has opted to hold an open caucus meeting, which is open to the public, to choose the finalists for the nomination. The cost of an all-postal vote across the county was simply too great, but this pioneering exercise by local Tories is the latest step in our localism agenda. Registration in advance is mandatory, but anyone who is eligible to vote can email. Police Hants, or one word, lowercase, at nwh-tories.co.uk. That's Police Hants at nwh-tories.co.uk. The meeting is in Fareham on Saturday, June 16th, and I would urge all those who want to have their say in who could be their commissioner to come along, listen to and question the applicants, and then vote. Jim Fleming, Conservative Party Area Chairman, Hants and White, London Road, Portsmouth.
And Jill Kennett writes, Winchester needs its field of dreams. Sarah, in response to the question, do you think Winchester needs a new leisure centre? The answer is a big, fat, resounding yes. In this Olympic year, and with a wonderful opportunity to reinforce the message of the importance and value of sport in our society, this is a chance we must not let slip away. Let's create a legacy for everyone to enjoy and build a facility that is top-notch and very special. At the same time, let's ensure we provide sporting action in this one venue for our talented youngsters to train in first-class facilities. Let's enable everyone to watch top performers competing locally and be inspired. Do you remember the film Field of Dreams? Build the field and they will come. This is a chance to build a complex of our dreams and make Winchester fit for the future. Jill Kennett, Lydiard Close, Boyett Wood, Eastleigh.
Where will Pindar patients go now, writes Madeline Bedford. So I fully endorse the views expressed by fellow patients at the Pindar Centre. Letters May the 24th. I too was devastated to receive the sudden and shocking news of its imminent closure. I've been a patient there for more than 10 years. The treatment in the pool has helped me to remain mobile and give me fresh heart when things were not going well. I'd like to emphasise the huge range of patients and conditions that receive help at the centre, from little babies to the elderly, and from those with severe disability to patients regaining fitness after an injury or operation. The physiotherapists provide personal and personalised attention. How will the loss of this purpose-built centre and the very special ambience created by the wonderful staff affect our community? Where are we to go now? Surely it's not too late to save the Pindar Centre? And that's from Madeline Bedford, Wren Close, Badger Farm.
And Mark Benzie says, have your say on places provision. Sir, with a week to go to respond to consultation on school places in Winchester, I would urge readers to make their views known. Hampshire County Council should be commended for making funding available and giving the opportunity a say in how places are provided. Neither option A or B is ideal in all respects, and both present challenges as well as opportunities. Perhaps you live in full flood and are concerned about traffic issues that might arise from a high concentration of school places that draw from an even wider area. You might be a Westgate parent and have a view on the challenges incorporating primary provision might bring. Or you value the choice a new primary might bring. Primary residents in Week, Weston and St Bede's may have concerns about how their children will integrate into Westgate alongside their own primary pupils. Or you could be a Western parent who's reluctant for that school to expand to 3 form. Parents elsewhere might have a view on the concentration of school places in one location. While it could mean further travel for some in Winchester, it might be a lot better than risking those same pupils having to travel outside Winchester to access places. These are just some of the issues Councillor Perry must weigh, and I don't envy him or underestimate the difficulty. Both options are a vast improvement on the temporary accommodation plan I spoke out against to the council and in the media. However, we have a chance to do more than just provide additional places. Winchester is known for its excellent schools, largely as a result of highly motivated communities working with excellent teachers and leaders to achieve the best for all our children. If one of the options has the power to improve educational outcomes more than the other, it's up to the community to make this known. So, please, set aside an hour or so to read the consultation documents, consider how the options might impact you and your children, and send in your view before June the 15th, It's not much to ask for a return for a £10 million investment. Mark Benzie, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this is a comment from Julia Lewis on the Winchester Business Improvement Districts. Sir, I totally disagree with Stephen Lyne, Chronicle Letters, May 31st. As a gift shop owner in the city centre, I am hugely grateful to the Winchester Business Improvement District and am supporting its renewal for another 5 years. As can be seen from cities without BIDs, councils, however well-intentioned, cannot be relied upon to provide initiatives that make a town centre attractive to locals and visitors. Although business rates are huge, mine have risen by 50% in 3 years, these do not go directly to the council. On the other hand, the small amount of extra business rates we pay for the BID is kept in the city, and we, not councillors and officers, decide what it is spent on. The city has benefited from police community support officers, advertising campaigns, chewing gum and graffiti removal, hanging baskets, Christmas lights, the hat fair, the Christmas market, and many more projects that BID has initiated or supported. Mr. Lyons may think they're extravagant, but the painted bollards in the square attract shoppers into a street that is easily overlooked. Most recently, BID was responsible for the abundant Union flag bunting and the Jubilate street party. Some city centres will hang on throughout the downturn, while others will end up ghost towns. Winchester competes against towns that offer more and bigger shops. If we want our retailing sector to survive, we need the BID to continue to make it stand out. Julia Lewis, Your Life, Your Style, The Brook Centre, Winchester.
And the last letter, give wildflowers a chance to grow. Sir, I note that following letters on the destruction of our roadside verges, it was necessary for Hampshire County Council to have an article far longer than any letters readers are allowed. Councillor Mel Kendall says that this work is essential and he ensures us that wildlife habitat is protected, which I have to disagree on. The Ladycroft Roundabout and Central Reservation adjoining it is the home of protected cowslips, and I was under the impression that the 1 metre cut would not take place while the plants were growing. The first cut did, in fact, not take place, but before the plants had died off, the roundabout had its metre-wide cut. Worse, the whole of the central reservation was shaved. Why? There's no problem with visibility, and it was done before the plants had seeded. As these plants are protected and HCC have been informed of their location, can it now be prosecuted? I make many trips through East Sussex, Kent and Hampshire, and it's noticeable that the first two in the main do a 1 metre cut on their verges and central reservations, and there are far more wildflowers. But the deeper I get into Hampshire, the more I see complete destruction and no wildflowers. While it's essential to maintain good visibility, there are many instances where areas are cut and there are no junctions or dual carriageway crossovers. I see no reason to shave roundabouts as the grass and flowers only grow waist high at most. Let's give our wildflowers a chance to grow. And that's John Gallienne, Perrins Close, Alsford. And now we're going to move on to historical items. Stepping back in time, Noel, 200 years, I think.
Years ago, 1812. A great sensation was excited yesterday by intelligence stating that the government of the United States has ordered all British subjects and property in America to be seized and detained and issued letters of marque and reprisal. This would amount to a declaration of war actually commenced in a spirit of more than common animosity. The intelligence is not true to the full extent, but we are sorry to say that it does not fall far short of it. And the other piece. Our local militia marched to Goodwood on Tuesday and fired a ball for the first time. The many holes which appeared in the target are extremely honourable to them. On His Majesty's birthday, the regiment were reviewed by General Houston in a field near this city, after which they went through many evolutions which were performed much to their credit, and they received the highest marks of approbation.
And now, 100 years ago, 1912. A public meeting will be held at the Guildhall at noon on Monday next to consider the best means of offering a fitting welcome to the King and Queen on the occasion of Their Majesty's visit to Winchester on July 15th. The advisability of making a grant out of the rates had been considered, but it was then felt this course was not desirable, and the meeting of citizens for next Monday was decided on. And the second item, a lecture on the Anglo-German problem as viewed by Germans was given in the Guildhall on Wednesday by Mr. W. H. Kerridge of Winchester College. In speaking on such a matter with the utmost impartiality, he earned the warm thanks of all present, and what he had to say was not a little enlightening concerning a problem which we believe everybody would desire to see amicably and satisfactorily settled.
And 50 years ago, in 1962, the girls of Denmark County Secondary School, Winchester, put their hands to a multitude of jobs on Saturday to raise funds for the new swimming pool. Mannequins, saleswomen, waitresses, these and more occupations were tackled with marked success by the volunteers. The occasion was the annual fete, and although it was organised by a hard-working team of parents and staff, a great deal of credit for the net sum of nearly £400 raised must go to the pupils themselves. And the second item, a number of Eastleigh men will be affected by the decision to close the Saunders Row factory at Eastleigh Airport by the end of the year. Westland Aircraft, the parent company, have undertaken to absorb as many of the men as possible into their other factories. The factory was originally based on the manufacture of helicopters and is the last plant in Hampshire to be engaged on the manufacture of helicopter components. And now we move on to...
25 years ago.
25 years ago, sorry.
1987. Jaded TV viewers are reaching for video cards rather than polling cards to avoid saturation election coverage. In a national swing to please any politician, business is booming in what are normally slack months. At Video Solent in Southgate Street, they said, "We usually don't do so well in summer, but it's never stopped." And no poll was needed to show why. People have said it's the election. It's a welcome release for them. And the other piece, the no right turn ban on vehicles leaving Chandler's Ford Industrial Estate has brought protests from Otterbourne about all the lorries heading north through their village. But Eastleigh Council says the ban at the Brickfield Lane junction with Bournemouth Road should stay until the M3 motorway scheme is completed. The ban has been enforced since June last year, following improvements at the nearby School Lane junction.
Thank you. And this time that does conclude the historical items. Sorry, Noel. And now we move on to editorial comment, putting the great back into Britain. The bunting may now be put away, the Diamond Jubilee mugs safely stored in cupboards, but the memory of this weekend will stay in our memories for some time to come. Both locally and nationally, many of us partied like it was 2012. And what a party it was. Not even the weather could put a dampener on the celebrations as the nation came out to celebrate Her Majesty's remarkable 60-year reign. From street parties, village green gatherings, river pageants and pop concerts at Buckingham Palace, the affection shown for the Queen was clear to see. And the message was a positive one for all to see, as celebratory images were beamed all around the world. When it comes to pomp and pageantry, no other nation can quite put on a show like Britain. And the show's not yet over. The London Olympics will again put the spotlight back on the UK this summer. If it's half as successful as the Diamond Jubilee celebrations, it will be the icing on the cake on a very special summer. For a while at least, it feels as if the great has been put back into Britain. And now first person, Noel.
Yes, first person this week is Rosamie McMullen, and her headline is Guilty of Doing Nothing. I did a lot of time wasting during that amazingly hot spell we had recently. I used the excuse of a painful neck and shoulder, which makes the overflowing ironing basket a no-go area. But let's be honest, the lure of my sunny balcony was just too hard to resist. The lingering guilt I feel at doing nothing is something I try to ignore, but I do wonder why I should feel it at all. After all, No one else is affected by my idleness, and it's only me who has to catch up on the chores, which always seems more of an effort after neglecting them. I do feel my time is wasted by a bombardment of unsolicited emails, junk mail and cold calls. The travel offers that sound a bargain until I see they are for couples only. The prizes only I and a million others have a chance of winning. The marvellous medical solutions to illnesses they imply I am likely to develop. Don't miss out, they shout. Delete the lot, I say. Less time wasted than in reading them. Ah, there's the phone. No, it's not a friend. No, it's not family. It's another cold call. After a few seconds of a disembodied voice trying to stress the importance of my taking advantage of some scheme or other, my blood pressure is rising and I put the phone down. I'm also getting annoyed with the constant request to answer customer service questions, survey questions. Excuse me. Just give us better value, I say. As for the necessity to press 1 for this and 2 for that, and don't bother if your query does not fit into a slot, how much time does that take up? As I carry yet another binful of junk mail downstairs, I wonder why they bother. When I buy a magazine, there are enough advertisements within the pages without having odd bits of card drop out. I'm tempted to let them drop out onto the shop floor in future. The irony of supposedly time-saving inventions causing time to be wasted was clear to me when my daughter in New Zealand suggested I text her. I was advised to buy a special SIM card which allowed cheap calls and that I did not need a code. Happily, I sent off a few messages and waited for a reply. Although my mobile said sent, they did not reach her. So I went to another shop and they gave me a code. Sadly, that brought up the word error on my screen. Her texts have not reached me either, so both of us have wasted our time. Of course, sitting at my computer and staring at a blank screen, fiddling around tidying up my desk, or filing in an effort to escape getting started on this column is an unavoidable waste of time when inspiration refuses to strike. And I can't blame anyone else for that.
Thank you. Now we continue with further items of general news. Claire.
This is a story about Giles Brandreth. Giles will entertain on awards night. An award-winning writer and former MP will light up this year's Winchester Business Excellence Awards as guest speaker. Giles Brandreth will wow the audience with witty tales of his time as a government minister and broadcaster and the 23 key lessons he learned from first-hand encounters with 21 leaders of our time. Amy McCartan of Competition Organisers Winchester Business Improvement District said, "We're delighted to have such an inspiring guest speaker at this year's awards ceremony, especially as we are celebrating our 10th anniversary. I'm looking forward to hearing about the 23 key lessons about leadership, as I'm sure that Giles will be delivering all in an entertaining speech. These awards celebrate the achievement of local businesses and reward them for their commitment to excellence. The ceremony takes place at Winchester Guildhall on Friday, June the 15th, with around 300 guests expected to attend. There are still some tickets remaining, available from Katie Crowe on 01256 352275. And this is accompanied by a picture of a very smiling Giles Brandreth.
In-demand charity may have to move. Rising demand at the Winchester Basics Bank means the charity might need a new home. That's what organisers told the city's MP, Steve Brime, when he visited its current base at Milland Road in Highcliffe. It received around 2,000 visits from people in need last year, giving them emergency food and clothing. The figure was a record, with just under 1,900 people helped in the previous 2 years. Visitors are usually given 5 days' worth of food, and are limited to 4 visits to the Basics Bank each year. They can be referred to the charity by Winchester City Council, housing associations and the Trinity Centre. During his visit, Mr. Brian said, "I really love what the Basics Bank team does, and it was a real honour for me to meet them and see exactly how it works. It's obviously a really well-run charity with a smooth, unfussy operation to get help where it's most needed." He added that the charity intended to hold a vision day in the coming weeks to discuss its future. The issues likely to be raised will include how to meet the rising demand and whether a new base is needed. Mr. Bryan said, I know the team would be delighted to hear any suggestions or contributions from members of the public about the future of the service. The MP is now in talks with the charity to place a box for donations at his constituency office in Stockbridge Road. He said, I really want to help the Basics Bank and use my shop in Winchester for as wide a community purpose as possible, which was always the intention. Winchester Basics Bank was launched in 2004 and is supported by Churches Together in Winchester.
Yes, above the headline, a sea of red, white and blue, there are several pictures of bustling crowds all facing the camera, all at various events to celebrate the Diamond Jubilee. There's the big lunch at Wanston Grange, Wanston, celebrations in Oslebury, and enjoying a picnic at Harestock Primary School, and a lovely picture of a boy, Matthew Wright, with the Union Jack painted on his face. And then even these sheep, pictured in a field at Hinton Ampler, got in the spirit because they've been painted with the Union Jack on their backs as well. But the story. Rain failed to put a dampener on celebrations in and around Winchester as thousands of people were determined to mark the Diamond Jubilee. Although some street parties were washed out by heavy rain on Tuesday, others strived to keep the celebrations going. Father and son Clive and Andy Mansell were not put off by organising a get-together in Weston Road on Tuesday afternoon. The pair, who run the nearby Full Flood Arms pub, put up a marquee to keep residents dry as they played a variety of games and created Jubilee artwork. Clive, 57, said, Oh, we've had a cracking time despite the weather. We put the marquee up to keep it dryish and then took it from there with lots of games, food and drink. We must have had around 200 people come out for it and everyone seemed to have enjoyed themselves. It wasn't all bad weather over the weekend, though, and many parties enjoyed glimmers of sunshine. Thousands turned the city centre into a sea of red, white and blue on Sunday for the Jubilates Street Party Fit for a Queen. More than 200 live performers, from musicians and magicians to comedians and actors, made the Broadway come alive at the free party, complete with stalls, workshops and food. The largest number of singers ever on the steps of Winchester Guildhall entertained the crowds with a rousing finale. Harestock Primary School kicked off its celebrations early last Friday with a visit from Winchester Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, who enjoyed a Jubilee picnic with children. Meanwhile, pupils at Colden Common Primary School were treated to a special Jubilee to special Jubilee souvenirs on Friday when the Parish Council presented them with commemorative cup mugs. Pupils also enjoyed making bunting, crowns, sceptres and thrones, which were then used in a special race for the throne at the Littleton and Harestock Jubilee Party on Monday. More than 2,000 people turned out for a Jubilee Family Fun Day in Sutton Scotney on Monday. The Grattan Recreation Ground was transformed for a day free 1950s-style family entertainment, including a pram race, fancy dress parade, classic car display, pony rides and tug of war. Two ladies played the role of Queen at the pensioners' tea party, where guests of honour included Gwen Manners, 95, who is believed to be the oldest person in the village, and Emily Starks, 90, who was born in Sutton Scotney. John Simmons, 78, who attended the tea with his wife Gwen, said, Oh, it's lovely. I've met people today I hardly ever see. It's just nice to get out and meet people and enjoy ourselves as everyone is in a good mood. The evening ended on a high note with a variety music concert, including live bands and a fantastic fireworks display. Kingsworthy residents were able to travel around their celebrations in style over the weekend as Friends of King Alfred buses laid on a service. The village celebrated in better weather with a party and feast, followed by the lighting of a Jubilee beacon on Monday evening. Around 500 villagers turned out in Sparsholt in the sunshine on Saturday, with some dressed in patriotic costume, including the Queen herself. In fact, Her Majesty sold fizzy drinks and special Sparsholt Jubilee tea towels outside the village, post office and shop, while others enjoyed party games and dancing. Debbie Caldwell of the Sparsholt Organising Committee said, Ah, it's one of those fabulous days when you're proud to be British. A typical English village celebrating in style with all ages having a day to remember. Owsleberry residents marked the Jubilee with 3 days of activities, including unveiling a specially commissioned Jubilee picnic table. Made by craftsman Chris Bevan of Wadden Lane, Owsleberry, the table was placed beside the church and blessed by parish vicar, the Reverend Jonah Watts, at a ceremony on Saturday attended by nearly 200 villagers. Over the weekend, hundreds of residents enjoyed live music, a marquee lunch and a free coronation tea. Organiser Cathy Fox, also of Wadden Lane, said, "It was wonderful to see our community come together to celebrate this wonderful occasion. Ah, it was exhausting, and I sometimes wonder why I do these things, but seeing everybody come together is what it's all about." Villagers dressed up in red, white and blue to share a delicious meal with family, friends and neighbours.
Meadows being harmed by trees, says Trust. More trees on the edge of Winchester are set for the chop in the name of nature conservation. The City Council is proposing to cut down several poplars in St. Cross, which are harming the ecological value of St. Faith's Meadow, a former water meadow next to the historic St. Cross almshouses. The meadow is a site of special scientific interest, and the trees, an alien species, are helping to dry out the boggy meadow, so reducing its importance. Hampshire Wildlife Trust also wants to reintroduce livestock and fencing to encourage a return of rare plants. A report to the Winchester Town Forum said, "St. Faith's Meadow has experienced a gradual decline in habitat quality, largely through neglect and inappropriate management over many years. The cutting could be controversial, as similar proposals by Winchester College have been criticised by some local people. However, the report said the poplars, planted in the 1970s, have damaged the area." It added, "These are now very large trees, which should have been harvested years ago. They have encouraged the increasing dominance of nettles by drying out the ground, causing enrichment through leaf fall and creating heavy shade. The decline is so severe that Natural England now classify the SSSI as unfavourable declining. The Hampshire Wildlife Trust wants to chop the trees, pollard some willows, restore the ditches and channels to improve water flow, manage the invasive scrub and introduce fencing for grazing livestock. A public meeting will be held on either June the 14th or June the 18th, and there will be a display at St. Cross Fete on Saturday, June the 30th.
Stroud bought by City School. A private prep school near Romsey has been bought out by a Southampton secondary school. The governors of King Edward VI School announced the acquisition of Stroud School on Monday. Their statement said both schools see this as an opportunity to enhance the education of children between the ages of 3 and 18 years. The Romsey School will be known as Stroud, the King Edward VI Preparatory School, and will continue under the headship of Alistair Dodds. Mr. Dodds said that Stroud was in a strong position and had around 320 pupils booked in for the start of next term, a figure which would be close to its upper limit. "There will be no immediate changes," said Mr. Dodds. "We will be in the same location and will continue to be a major employer in the Romsey area." "King Edwards has been looking for a prep school and we're very flattered they've come to us." He said that on average around 24 Stroud pupils moved on to King Edwards, most of them at 11, but a few at 13. While King Edwards has an entrance examination, Mr. Dodds said the Stroud would remain non-selective. The head paid tribute to the work of the Sanger Davis family at Stroud over 52 years. The school, founded in 1926 by F. E. Woodall, was taken over by Andrew and Elizabeth Sanger Davis in 1960. The late Mr. Sanger Davis was headmaster until 1984. The couple's daughter, Judy Gregory, is the current deputy head. Mrs. Sanger Davis said, "As a family, we're immensely proud of the success of the school, and our joining King Edwards will ensure that the excellent education of children at Stroud will continue for generations to come." The chairman of the governors of King Edwards, Brian Gay, said, "We're delighted to welcome Stroud School as part of the King Edwards family. The links between the two schools are strong and well-founded. Over the years, hundreds of pupils have proceeded from the one school to the other with great success, reflecting the values shared between the two institutions. King Edward VI School is an independent co-educational day school for 11 to 18-year-olds, founded 450 years ago. Stroud is a co-educational preparatory school. In its 2011 ISI inspection report, the team stated that the school fulfills its aim to promote an education of the highest quality.
Hampshire Treasure marks 40 years of conservation. It's 40 years since the sleepy hamlet of Marble near Winchester echoed to the sounds of the safari as exotic animals from across the world breathed life into the English countryside. Set in the grounds of Marwell Hall, where King Henry VIII is said to have courted Jane Seymour, and which saw service during the war as a secret base for aircraft from the Cunliffe Owen aircraft factory at Swathling, the zoo has developed into one of Hampshire's best-loved attractions. Founded by John Knowles, it was primarily established as a conservation and breeding centre where endangered species could be kept in spacious surroundings while offering the chance to see rare and interesting animals in a picturesque English country park. Even in its infancy, the zoo offered an impressive collection of animals which included the almost extinct Siberian tiger as well as one of the world's largest groups of scimitar-horned oryx. Late in May 1972, Marwell opened its gates for the first time, charging an entrance fee of 30p for adults and 20p for children. During the ensuing years, the zoo witnessed many successful breeding programs, which included tigers, cheetahs, and other endangered species. But one particular event was to make its name. In 1977, Marwell made the local news when one of its giraffes, Victor, fell and was unable to get up. The initial media attention was one of amusement, the animal having supposedly slipped while trying to mate. But as the days passed, there were serious concerns for his welfare. Victor remained on the ground for 6 days, despite valiant attempts to lift him, and his plight became front-page news as far away as South America and the Middle East. Sadly, Victor later died with his head on the shoulder of John Knowles, suffering a heart attack as a result of stress due to the trauma. The zoo also faced trying times in 2001, when the country was hit by foot-and-mouth disease. Marwell was forced to close for 5 weeks, plunging it into a financial crisis, with the long-term future of the zoo looking extremely bleak. But an Animal Magic campaign raised more than £127,000 and saved the zoo from permanent closure. The support it received was very different from the response it received when Marwell was first proposed, however. More than 1,000 people opposed the plan then, but the whole of Hampshire pulled together when the zoo was threatened and helped to save a treasure the region had grown extremely fond of.
Village Agent Scheme to Help Elderly. A scheme of village agents is being rolled out across the county to help older people living in rural areas. The County Council has agreed to spend £170,000 on a 3-year project which provides practical support. Volunteer agents provide information about services such as Meals on Wheels, Attendance Allowance, the Blue Badge Scheme, Community Transport and Befriending Schemes. The grant comes after county chiefs hailed a pilot project a success in 8 villages, including King Somborne, St Marybourne, Waltham Chase and Burley in the New Forest. The aim is to help bridge the gap between older, isolated people and voluntary and statutory organisations which may be able to help. Council chiefs hope this low-level support will mean more elderly people can stay independent in their own homes. Hampshire Age Concern will continue to run the scheme with the council grant paying for a full-time village agent coordinator and office support. The plan is to train up to 45 new volunteers. Hampshire Fire and Rescue is also involved, training village agents to be home safety advisers. Councillor Felicity Heinson, Executive Member for Adult Social Care, said, "There are a great many services available to help older people and their families, but they are often not aware of them. Village agents will help them find the support they need."
TV docs praise for new care home. TV health guru Dr. Hilary Jones has praised a new £8 million dementia care home in Winchester. The Daybreak presenter and medical author was speaking at a public open day at Colton Care's St. Catherine's View home in Stanmore, where he met the first residents to move in. Some 80 jobs have been created at the home, where residents live in five small house groups with a high degree of personal-centred care. He was shown around the 56-bed home by Colton Care Managing Director Ian Hudson, and there's a picture of Ian Hudson with Hilary Jones in front of a map, smiling at the opening of the centre, and also home manager Anne-Marie Med. Dr. Jones said, "I'm a great admirer of Colton Care because their approach is based on kindness and compassion on top of knowledge. Looking after older people is not just about powerful drugs or medical health. It's about the care they receive, their quality of life and their happiness. Colton Care gets better and better, and you can see that in the attention to detail that's gone into St. Catherine's View. The design is just fantastic."
Keep Gateway to Park open plea. Winchester neighbours are once again trying to stop a gateway being closed to a well-used park. The group of residents want to stop the access at Orams Mount to Orams Arbour Park being bricked up by a management company representing neighbours living at Orams Mount. The gateway, close to homes in Allison Way, was a planning condition when St Paul's Hospital was converted into homes in 2000 to 2001. But Kempthorne Management Company has applied to change the condition to allow the wall to be extended and to fill in the gateway, a popular shortcut to the park from St Paul's Hill. Carolyn Carden, 57, of St Paul's Hill, said, "The Kempthorne residents say because there is an open gate, there will be more antisocial problems. But it transpires there are hardly any problems there. We all suffer from urban living. Where I live, there are drunks who come past at 3 a.m. swearing and singing, but I would feel strongly we should not become a series of gated communities. Why should these residents have special treatment when they knew there was a right-of-way there when they bought their homes?" It follows a previous battle in 2008 when Kempthorne installed a keypad-controlled lock on the gate and only gave the code to residents in Orams Mount. But the lock was removed in 2009 after the City Council threatened legal action against Kempthorne for breaching its planning permission. Mrs. Carden, a solicitor, added, "Nothing has changed since 2009 when the council said it would put in an injunction. It's very difficult to see on what grounds they could make this application." Councillor Ray Pearce, ward councillor for St Paul's, said it was important to keep the right-of-way open for all residents. He said, "The people in some of the houses have said they have a lot of problems with people going through the access drunk and urinating and doing all sorts of nasty things, but the police have been onto this for a couple of years, and as far as I know, they've never had any reports of this going on. This will affect a lot of people, including those in Lower Greenhill Road who use it as a cut through to St Paul's Surgery. It's important to keep it open." Nobody from Kempthorne Management Company was available to comment at the time the Chronicle went to press.
Tent squatters moved on after a court order. Squatters have been moved on and their tents cleared away after the City Council secured a court order against them. Three tents had been pitched on land next to Winchester Rugby Club between the club and North Walls Recreation Ground for several weeks, but last Monday the City Council had them removed while the occupants were away. Rob Memory, a director at the club, said, "At night there were about 15 or 20 of them. They left a burnt-out old mattress and the ground where they were is burnt. Why does Winchester open its door to all these hobos? The council invites them here to various centres but then lets them all hang out anywhere. We're right on the edge of the council's exclusion zone, so we just have to put up with them all." City Councillor Dominic Hiscock, who is also president of the rugby club, said, "Every year we have a problem like this. People often ask us, why can't the police just kick them off? Well, we can't just do that. For example, in certain scenarios, we might have to get a court order naming the individuals before they can be moved. Sandra Tuddenham, head of community safety at the City Council, said, "In this instance, we obtained a court order against the tents rather than the individuals. We always try to look at the individuals involved first, and where necessary, we'll refer them to support services. But we have to balance that against the impact these persons might have on the local community."
Late evening opening for Mottisfont Roses. Mottisfont's roses have felt the benefit of the recent rain. Gardeners at the Romsey National Trust venue said they were expecting an impressive showing of its roses this year, thanks to the wet conditions. The roses are expected to be at their peak in the third week of June, and on certain days in June the gardens will be open late to allow people to appreciate them. Mottisfont's head gardener David Stone said cool, damp conditions after a dry, warm start to the year are excellent for roses. Late evening opening takes place on June the 15th and 16th, the 22nd and 23rd, and the 29th and 30th, with opening until 8 p.m. and last entry at 7:30 p.m. Although the house and cafe close at 5 p.m, the shop and refreshment kiosk will open until late. Mottisfont is also putting on a Pims and Roses evening on June the 13th and June the 27th, when visitors will be able to wander through the gardens with their drink and chat to specialist gardeners, with music from the Romsey Area Youth Jazz Orchestra and the bluegrass band Red Jackson. Tickets for Pims and Roses cost £18 and booking is essential. For details, telephone 01794 340757. That's 01794 340757.
Major road shut for electric cables work. A major Winchester suburban road has been closed to through traffic for around 2 months to allow for work to electricity cables. Scottish and Southern Energy are renewing the high voltage electricity cables on Stockbridge Road, Hairstock Road, Andover Road and Well House Lane. Hairstock Road will remain open at all times for residents, but to ensure the safety of SSE staff and road users, the road will be closed to general traffic. The essential work started on Wednesday and is expected to take about 60 days to complete. Engineers will be working from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. Berwick Road will be the alternative diversion route for through traffic.
Millie's mug makes a little bit of history. A time capsule and commemorative tree have been planted in Hinton Ampner after a schoolgirl won a National Trust competition. Millie Woolcott, 10, of 4 Marks Primary School, was joined by her classmates last Thursday at the National Trust Garden to plant the medlar tree. The competition was to design the best Jubilee mug, and Millie was also presented with a completed mug from her design, which features a horse-drawn royal carriage beside a tree covered in royal emblems. One of the Queen's pet corgis also sits below the tree. Louise Washington, who coordinated the competition, said, "We had such a great response to our competition and the entries were of a very high standard, but Millie's design really stood out. We all loved it." Visitors can view the 11 winning and runner-up designs in our tea rooms over the next fortnight. They're really eye-catching and we're all immensely proud of Hinton Ampner's close association with its local schools. Tree planting at Hinton Ampner is beginning to become something of a tradition during Jubilees, as a horse chestnut was planted there for the Golden Jubilee in 2002. And this is accompanied by a picture of Millie with her mug standing at the newly installed tree, along with some of her classmates and the person who dug the hole for the tree.
Ideas are plenty for Vision for Winchester. Civic chiefs have been bombarded with ideas for their vision for Winchester Town. The City Council has invited comments on the way it proposes the City of Winchester should change over the next 20 years. Winchester Town Forum met yesterday, Thursday, to consider the responses and recommend a final version of the vision. The issue has been controversial, especially over the proposals for developing on Greenfields on the edge of the city, such as Barton Farm and Bushfield Down. The most numerous ideas were from Andrew Rutter, the council's former conservation architect, on behalf of the Quakers. Among Mr. Rutter's many suggestions are converting the long-term empty Avalon House on Chesil Street into a hostel or B&B accommodation, retention of relatively cheap properties on Winnall Industrial Estate, residential development at the former Serco depot at Bar End, along Chesil Street in place of the proposed budget hotel, and on part of the St. Peter's car park off North Walls. He also calls for more public seats and children's play sculptures, model boating on the raised pool at Peninsula Barracks, better street signing for less obvious attractions such as Pilgrim's Hall, and to viewing points, and a rooftop restaurant on Woolstaplers Hall if the English project secures it as a base, and a new pedestrian route from Middlebrook Street to the School of Art and on to Hyde Abbey. Mr. Rutter also calls for the Roger Brown model of Winchester in 1873 to be permanently exhibited. He says trees should be better managed and calls for tree planting on Badger Farm Road. The City of Winchester Trust and Winchester Action on Climate Change want to see a greater emphasis on walking and cycling. They said the vision needs to have an action plan, as otherwise it's too vague. Winchester Fit for Future is proposing a new sports and leisure centre to replace River Park. Church commissioners want direct mention in the vision for development at Bushfield Camp. And the University of Southampton is reviewing the Park Avenue campus and looking to better integrate it with the city centre, and also considering more student accommodation in the city. Meanwhile, Winchester City Residents Association calls for a review of Silver Hill, a review of council estates for more social housing, more subsidy for bus services, and greater support for Residents Association.
Fiona gets some sound advice for the future. Winchester businesswoman Fiona Whitehouse is hoping to revolutionise the lives of hard-of-hearing business people. Sound Advice is her new mentoring service aimed at entrepreneurs with hearing difficulties, and she hopes her new initiative will encourage more people to start their own businesses. Ms. Whitehouse, who is herself profoundly deaf, established PA Anywhere in 2006 and was recently awarded PA of the Year at the Southampton Venus Business Awards. She said, "I have now reached a point where I would like to help other deaf people who have an ambition to start their own business but just need some well-timed support to get them going. I hope that by drawing on my own experiences as a deaf entrepreneur, I can now offer encouragement and tried and tested advice to the many people in the UK who suffer from hearing difficulties." Winchester and Thunder's Ford MP, Steve Brine, has applauded the Sound Advice initiative following a meeting with Fiona at one of his surgeries. He said, "Fiona is an exceptional lady based right at the heart of the city in full flood, and I want to support her venture in every way possible. There are so many people across my patch showing such entrepreneurial spirit, and Fiona is really leading the way. I would encourage anyone who's interested to get in touch with Fiona or with me through my office to find out more." Fiona, a former Hampshire Deaf Association volunteer, has mentored local community members but feels that there is still more that can be done to help budding entrepreneurs. For more information about the Sound Advice Initiative, or if you are aware of a hard-of-hearing individual who could benefit from business mentoring, email fiona@pa-anywhere.co.uk. That's fiona@pa-anywhere.co.uk.
Residents win masts battle. Residents have fended off a series of fresh applications made by Vodafone to build phone masts in Winchester. Winchester City Council planning officers rejected all four bids after receiving dozens of letters from objectors. It is the third time that Vodafone has sought permission for a batch of fresh masts to boost coverage in the city. Previous attempts have either been withdrawn or refused and have triggered plenty of local opposition. The company's latest attempt was no exception, with residents rallying to the cause once more. Vodafone wanted to build at Stoke Road in Abbots Barton, along with Chilbolton Avenue in Winchester. The junction of Stony Lane and Stockbridge Road in Wick, near the Waitrose store, was being targeted too. Vodafone also wanted to build at Andover Road North in Hestock, which was refused a fortnight ago. The other three plans have now been rejected, and residents are celebrating their latest success. Mother of three, Julie Mitten, who has led the campaign against the Stoke Road scheme, said the site is wrong. Backed by her neighbours, she has always argued that the 13.8-metre mast should not be built in a residential area. Stoke Road is right on the edge of Winchester, and campaigners say the nearby countryside would be a better choice. She also criticised Vodafone for reapplying when residents had already made their views known. Let's hope there's not another application to the same site in the future, she said. Vodafone can still submit fresh bids or appeal to the Planning Inspectorate against the refusals.
King's comes up trumps. Pupils at King's School Winchester have presented a hefty cheque to a local charity. They raised £2,500 for the Joe Glover Trust, based in Colden Common, in the school's catchment area. The charity helps the families of children with cancer and is named after a Colden Common boy who died in 2006. Student Isabel White said, "It feels really good to know how the money we raised directly affects local families who need our support." Chris Sinclair added, "It's humbling to know how difficult these children's lives must be, and fantastic that the money will make such a difference. We had fun raising it, and now we can see it change lives." And there's a picture of three of the students with the traditional giant cheque presenting that to the charity.
Pensioner trapped by overgrown path. A Winchester pensioner says he feels trapped in his own home after the council failed to clear an overgrown path he uses for his mobility scooter. Dan Smith Peterson, 88, a retired master mariner, said, "I feel trapped. A fortnight ago I was nearly killed by a car. My scooter tipped over into the road. I put my foot out just in time as the car went past. I don't dare go out there without someone taking me." Mr. Smith Peterson's daughter, Rebecca, or is that Rebecca, of Old Rectory Gardens, Abbotsworthy, said, "I've called 5 times in 4 months. First I called in February, and the Hampshire County Council were there within a week, but they said it's not the County Council's responsibility, it's the City Council's." Ms. Smith Peterson said, "I've been given a tracking number for the County Council's website, which says the problem has been dealt with, but the path still hasn't been cleared. The City Council said they'd do something, but they didn't. I called again 2 weeks ago. I've called them at least twice." Roger Huckstab, council member for the environment at Winchester City Council, said he could not find a record of Mr. Smith Peterson's request. Councillor Huckstab said, "I wouldn't be able to tell you who's responsible for clearing the path without further investigation. It may not always be clear which particular party is responsible." He continued, "It's clearly a difficult issue, though, especially if this gentleman is dependent on the path to carry out his daily provisions."
Hampshire Ambassadors Network continues to grow. Hampshire County Council's Ambassadors Network continues to grow from strength to strength, with over 1,300 members and new ambassadors enlisting each week. All are dedicated to promoting Hampshire as a superb place for business, tourism and conference. The Hampshire Ambassadors visited Discovery Yachts in April, which employs over 100 skilled craftsmen and produces cruising yachts known worldwide for their quality and craftsmanship. In May, 20 ambassadors attended a business breakfast hosted by the Careers Development Group, CDG, a leading welfare-to-work charity with a wealth of experience of helping people find and stay in work. Lisa Gonglaves, Employer Relationship Manager for CDG, said, "The Hampshire Ambassadors visit was a great success and something we would love to repeat in the future. The network presents an excellent opportunity to meet other business professionals and share ideas. All of this can happen in your own workplace." The ambassador scheme has been running for 16 years, and each month a group of ambassadors visit innovative companies in Hampshire. The aim of each visit is to encourage other Hampshire firms to strive for business excellence, develop their own best practice procedures, and thereby improve competitiveness. This is accompanied by a couple of photographs of groups of ambassadors.
Centre opened a new £1.4 million pastoral centre at St Peter's Roman Catholic Church in Winchester has been officially opened. It was attended by two bishops, the Dean of Winchester and the city's mayor and mayoress. Bishop Crispian Hollis of Portsmouth blessed the building in Jury Street and unveiled the dedication plaque. He was joined by scores of parishioners and Bishop Peter Doyle of Northampton, who used to be a Winchester parish priest. Canon Paul Townsend, who is the priest of St Peter's, was also there along with the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, was joined by his wife Anne in planting a rosebush to mark the occasion. The pastoral centre has replaced a 1960s building and will be available for community groups to hire. And there's a picture of the formal opening by the bishop of the centre with another picture of the Dean of Winchester outside the new pastoral centre.
On the run from prison. A trio from Winchester Prison went on the run, but thankfully it didn't include any inmates. Three officers at the jail, Mark Boyd, John Watts and Kirsten Higgins, put their best feet forward for charity. Their destination was Haslar Secure Immigration Centre in Gosport, which is 26 miles away from Winchester. Mr Boyd said, "We did have a few hundred prisoners volunteer to complete the run with us, but we were unsure as to how many we would finish with." Dubbed the Prison to Prison Marathon, the trio was raising funds for three good causes. They included Help for Heroes, along with Pray for Jay, the campaign to help paralysed Southampton stuntman Jay Young. The 23-year-old used to work opposite the prison in Romsey Road at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The third charity is the Meningitis Trust. It comes after Mr Boyd's wife, Carol, was admitted to hospital with bacterial meningitis early last month. She is now recovering, having left hospital. The runners finished their challenge in 6 hours and 10 minutes, and there's a nice picture of the three of them in a running kit outside Winchester Prison, smiling cheerfully, looking ready to set off on their run.
Watercress alleviates stress of workouts. Locally grown crop watercress has done it again. New research, sponsored by Hampshire-based Vitacress Salads, has found that antioxidant-rich watercress, often labelled a superfood, can alleviate the natural stress put on our body by a workout. Though regular moderate exercise is known to be good for us, the increased demands on our body is also known to cause damage to our DNA. According to a new study by scientists at Edinburgh Napier University and a team led by Dr. Gareth Davison at the University of Ulster, eating watercress can prevent some of the damage caused by high-intensity exercise and help maximise the benefits of a tough workout. The study findings have now been published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Study leader Dr. Mark Fogarty from Edinburgh Napier School of Life, Sports and Sciences said, "Although we're all aware of how good exercise can be for our bodies, pounding the treadmill, lifting weights or doing high level of training can take its toll. The increased demand on the body for energy can create a build-up of free radicals which can damage our DNA. The study found that consuming a relatively small amount of watercress each day can help raise the levels of important antioxidant vitamins, which may help protect bodies and allow people to enjoy the rewards of keeping fit." Dr. Steve Rothwell of Hampshire's Vitacress Salad said, "This is a fantastic reaffirmation of the outstanding health attributes of watercress. It is always gratifying to see rigorous scientific studies such as this validate the belief held for millennia that watercress is a very special food."
Sue happy to be on the rocks. A healthy food and drink company based in Sutton, Scotney, has appointed a new marketing manager. Sue McIntosh was given the newly created job at Rocks Drink and Meridian Foods and will initially focus on new ready-to-drink lines. Sue, a Winchester resident, has previously held senior positions at Rank Hovis MacDougall, Warner Lambert and Bendix. Russell Smart, Group Commercial Director at 3V Natural Foods, said, "Our brands are helping our business deliver year-on-year growth, and we're keen to grow further through the development of our management team. We're delighted to have created a senior marketing role within the company, and Sue brings with her a wealth of relevant experience. She will develop a new strategic vision for our Rocks and Meridian brands and use her expertise to support a renewed sales focus."
Four arrested after man's death. A man from Winchester, aged 33, was among four arrested last Tuesday in connection with the murder of an Albanian near Southampton last month. Three of the men, aged 34, 36 and 56 years, are from Southampton. They were being held at police stations across the county and questioned by detectives from the major investigations team. None have been named. Detectives are investigating the murder of Agim Hochsa, 29, who was found in a burnt-out Mercedes in Chilworth Drove, Southampton, on April the 10th. All four were arrested last Tuesday on suspicion of conspiracy to commit murder. Arben Chleshi, of 25 of Onslow Road, Southampton, has been charged with Mr. Hoxha's murder.
Wyvern's Ticket to Brum. Musicians from an Eastleigh school are to perform in July in Birmingham as part of the National Youth Festival of Music. Now in its 42nd year, the festival is an established event that has become one of the major highlights in the music education calendar. At Wyvern College in Fair Oak, over 150 talented young musicians from every year group have been invited to take its concert band and choir to perform as part of the festival. The Wyvern Choir, pictured left, has grown and developed over the last 8 years and is a regular visitor to the finals. Its members span all 5 year groups from year 7 to year 11, and it currently has 80 singers rehearsing after school each week under the direction of Kim Seagrove from Hampshire Music Services. The Wyvern Concert Band will be directed by Brian Postlethwaite. It recently performed in the regional festival in Southampton, where the adjudicators congratulated it on its exciting and polished performance. And as I said, there's a picture of the youth choir here, all looking very, very happy.
Winchester Film Festival 2012 launched at the Great Hall with Film Hampshire. Winchester Film Festival 2012 launched in style last month at the Great Hall, Winchester, with Film Hampshire proudly sponsoring the opening night. Over 50 guests attended the evening, which included a screening of the Mel Brooks comedy classic Young Frankenstein. Hampshire County Council is extremely proactive when it comes to encouraging and supporting film production in the area. Film Hampshire was established in 2003 and offers expert information and hands-on assistance to productions of all sizes. Each month, the team receives around 40 filming inquiries, and these range from university students looking to film their final dissertation project to film location managers looking for a Parisian backdrop for the Hollywood adaptation of Les Mis. The idea of the Winchester Film Festival is to screen great films in appropriate and often unusual locations in and around Winchester, providing the audience with an immersive and unique viewing experience through which they can rediscover these classic films or perhaps even catch them for the first time. This year's Winchester Film Festival offered Hampshire residents the opportunity to experience Sidney Lumet's remarkable 1957 courtroom drama 12 Angry Men at the Law Courts in Winchester. The Burt Lancaster cult classic The Swimmer, screened in the main pool at River Park Leisure Centre, and the roller coaster thriller Speed on a moving bus, as well as many other great films on location. Each year, the Winchester Film Festival works in partnership with a local charity. This year, all the proceeds from the festival have been donated to Friends of the Family, and with many of the shows selling out weeks in advance, it's clear the festival is set for bigger things in 2013.
Apprenticeships boost for Line. one of Hampshire's premier tourist attractions, has received a huge boost in securing its future. The Watercress Line in Oldsford has received £154,000 in grant so that it can employ four apprentices. The money was awarded by the Heritage Lottery Fund and follows a grant of £180,000 it received in 2010. The steam railway, which runs through Hampshire, already has a scheme for 10 apprentices, but is finding it hard to recruit more people who have the right skills. David Snow, who is coordinating the project, said, "Preserved railways are critically dependent on relatively few long-term members, who are not getting any younger. Being able to employ a further four enthusiastic young people under this scheme is very satisfying. Anyone wishing to apply for an apprenticeship should visit watercressline.co.uk."
And a couple of stories about Winchester Race for Life. A group of women who work together at Savills in Winchester have teamed up to take part in this year's Cancer Research UK's Winchester Race for Life. The 10 women, who span a range of ages and abilities, were inspired to enter in memory of a former colleague, Lucy Sands, and from Muff Corbett, wife of their colleague Peter Corbett, both of whom recently lost their fight against cancer. The Savile girls have been in training for the event this Sunday and planning their team costumes for the big day. "We're a very mixed group," says Associate Lindsay John. "Some of us are fighting fit and some of us, well, aren't. And one of us is pregnant. But we're all keen to take part and raise awareness of the work that the charity does." While running 5K is not a particularly tough challenge compared to some of the battles that cancer sufferers face, none of us are known for being runners. With ex-colleague Lucy in mind, the fancy dress choice was obvious. "Lucy was never without her pearls and a pashmina. An outfit was never complete without them," said Lindsay. "So we thought it was both fitting and fun to wear the same. The ladies are going to compete the 5K course and are hoping to raise £800 together. Anyone wishing to sponsor them should visit raceforlifesponsorme.org/Savills, that's spelt S-A-V-I-L-L-S. And there's a photograph of the ladies in their pink, of course, and in their pearls. And then there's another team of people. "Staff at a Winchester supermarket were tickled pink to raise awareness for Winchester Race for Life. The ladies at Tesco and Winnall are all taking part in the race to remember and celebrate family and friends who have suffered from the disease or are undergoing treatment." And this is accompanied by a picture of the girls holding pink balloons and, of course, in their pink T-shirts.
Celebrating Harry's big day. Five generations of one family gathered in Oldsford to celebrate a very special birthday. They were there to mark the 100th birthday of Harry Mason, a resident at Old Oldsford Cottage Care Home. Mr. Mason has lived in Oldsford for around 40 years, working for Evans the Butcher before he retired. He was born in Chichester and grew up in Southampton before going into farming and becoming an auxiliary fireman in Petersfield during World War II. His daughter-in-law, Margaret, said, "Harry has lived all over the place. We're not sure what to believe about his days in the war, though he tells us he was one of the people on standby to take up arms should the Germans have invaded, because he was a good shot with a gun." Margaret of Water Lane added, "He had a wonderful time at the party and it was brilliant for everyone. Harry was also thrilled when his GP, Dr. Peter Stokes, gave him his card from the Queen because they're special friends and have been for years. Harry has two sons, Ron and Cliff, Margaret's husband, three grandchildren, eight great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandson, two-year-old Charlie." And there's a picture of Harry surrounded by his family, smiling happily, and everybody obviously enjoying a great party.
Games hopeful Aaron big hit at Hairstock. A Winchester school continued its build-up to the Olympics by welcoming a Paralympic hopeful last week. Team GB wheelchair rugby player Aaron Phipps visited Hairstock Primary School to speak to pupils who have been learning about the Paralympics. Aaron, who plays for Cardiff Pirates, is hoping to compete in this year's games after taking part in the GB Cup and European Championships last year. He took 3 assemblies throughout the day, telling children about his experiences, training regime, and the bumps and bruises he has earned playing the sport. Aaron then helped students create posters and radio and TV interviews to promote the Olympics and Paralympics. Head teacher Jackie Sankey said, "To work so closely with Aaron, who is an inspirational athlete, has been an amazing opportunity for our children and staff. They've had a fantastic day, and we're incredibly grateful to Aaron and the County Council and to our parents on the school's Olympics committee for organising this great event."
Brothers Boost World Wildlife Fund Appeal. 2 brothers from Uslebury Primary School have recovered from the effort walking to school the 6 miles from their home in Winchester. 10-year-old Ethan Dade and his brother Archie, 8, decided to use Walk to School Week as a fundraising opportunity for the Worldwide Fund for Nature's Tiger Appeal. The boys have already exceeded their £100 target. They took just over 3 hours to get there, with most of it uphill. Mum Josie, who plans to run home to Winchester after dropping the boys at school, said, "Archie wants to save the tigers. We've already raised £140, so have gone past the original target, which is great." Head teacher, Mrs. Eleanor Ponson, said, "I'm really impressed with Ethan and Archie for coming up with the idea, let alone putting it into practice. It's only a 10-minute journey by car, but I know they've given themselves around 2 hours to get here." Pupils and parents at Uslebury are supporting Walk to School Week by parking at the Ship Inn and walking half a mile to school. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the 2 boys with their head teacher, Mrs. Eleanor Ponson.
Garden party that welcomed bugs. More than £2,500 was raised at a charity garden party held in Upham near Bishop's Waltham. Tom and Rosamond Sweet Escott were the hosts, and around 150 guests attended the event. The money was raised for BUGS, and that stands for Burns Unit Group Support, which is based at Salisbury District Hospital. The group is trying to secure money to build a roof garden for patients to enjoy and grow their own plants. Because of the Burns Unit's specialist work, patients are taken there from across the region, including Hampshire. BUGS sold several ladybird-themed gifts at the garden party to tie in with the charity's logo. And the event was also attended by hospital chiefs, along with staff from estate agent Savills, which supported the event.
And here's another Olympic-themed story. Steph discovers plenty of talent at St Swithin's. St Swithin's junior pupils enjoyed a packed week of Olympic activities and events. Steph Twell, young Olympic runner and 2010 Commonwealth Games medalist, joined the juniors for an assembly and training workshop. After talking with the children about the highs and lows of her athletic career, she led 3 workshops where the children learnt about warm-up techniques, body posture, and different types of training. The whole school watched divers Emily Alderman and Abby Baker in a display at St Swithin's pool. Abby, 13, from Oslebury, currently in year 8 at St Swithin's and swimming at international level, has been awarded a training grant as one of Hampshire's talented athletes. Emily, daughter of pool manager Mark Alderman, has won 16 British titles, as well as gaining 5th place in the European Junior Championships and 8th in the World Junior Championships.
Pram racers pushed to the limits at fun event. Prams of all shapes and sizes, including the weird, the wonderful and just plain daft, were among the 47 entries at the 47th Ropley Pram Race. But it was all part of the fun on Monday, as hundreds of people gathered at the start and finish at the recreation ground, with many lining the route of the 2.5-mile course around the village. While some were aiming to win the village's annual pram race, for many others it was simply the fun of taking part. Now in its 47th year, the 2012 winners were the teenage team of James Airy and James Forrest, who triumphed on home turf. Nobody could match their time of 14 minutes and 57 seconds. The race included entries that were designed for their eye-catching qualities rather than for pure speed. That usually includes Ropley Pram Race stalwarts, the Newts. Following on from last year's Chelsea Flower Show-inspired effort, this year their entry took its cue from the Anthill Mob in Wacky Races. Several other competitors lined up in fancy dress, and not all of them completed the course on four wheels. Organiser James Newman said, "Some of the entries came over the line with only one wheel left on the pram, and the teams had to carry them across the line." The race, thought to be the largest of its kind in Britain, usually generates around £600 to £700 for community groups. This is accompanied by virtually a whole page of photographs of people in their various machines. We've got a little girl dressed up as a queen with her soldier beside her. We've got someone in a Batmobile, perhaps. we've got a cupcake. We've got overgrown boys in tiny pushchairs. And we've got something that looks like a Rolls Royce, but it doesn't seem to be able to move.
lovely ending. So that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, it's thank you to our readers, Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Claire Caffrine.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please pop the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.